It's time for the MMA Insiders.
All right, here we go. The MMA Insiders on a Thursday. We are back after a little hiatus. Hour of mixed martial arts talk here on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. It's Steve Cofield, Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and covering the cage.com, and Brett Okamoto from ESPN.com. Big ESPN. I don't know, every ESPN, right? We see him on TV. So we got 60 minutes on the way. We'll get to our top six stories here in just a second. Kind of a busy week, right? A lot going on?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all going on. It was a very quiet week. I think we're done. I don't think we have anything to talk about.
Do we mention your stakeout last night or wait until we get to our Conor McGregor stories?
We don't have to mention it at all, actually.
We do. I think Brett wants to mention that, so we'll get to that in about 25 minutes because it was completely ridiculous, but we'll save the ridiculousness for around 6:30. So let's start out as we count down the top six stories with our MMA six. To go back to UFC 208, you guys can explain the judging and scoring issues. I will throw this out, though, to set this up. A tweet that I found because someone was so angry about the scoring and judging. NYC doesn't deserve MMA. Just awful all the way around. Total garbage. A little too much on a couple of fronts.
It seems a bit strong. Listen, there's issues. They're still trying to work things out. It hasn't been a long time that they've had legalized MMA there. I think some of this goes on in the UFC as well because, you know, there is a process by which, you know, judges and referees can be protested if you don't think they're ready. Now, I did talk to some people behind the scenes of the UFC that said, hey, we saw that he had enough experience. This, the referee that was in the main event that ended up causing some controversy. And it's on New York. If they trust him, we're not going to interfere with who they want to be in place. But if you don't think that somebody's qualified, I think it is on, you know, it's on the promoter to raise those issues before. And it doesn't mean that the commission is going to, you know, back down. We've seen people challenge it in Nevada, and Nevada has said, hey, this is our guy, we're going to keep him in there. But at least raise those concerns earlier, because then you have things like poor judging, I think, in the co-main event for sure, and poor refereeing, in my opinion, in the main event. And it's a black eye, but I think they're, you know, it's not egregious to the point where they shouldn't be allowed to have MMA there. It's something that needs to be worked out.
I think some of it comes down to this kind of problem as well. And look, should Todd Anderson have been the guy in the main event? Probably not. Probably not. When you have other referees there who have more experience, why put this guy in your main event? You're just asking for trouble. But at the same time, I feel like sometimes if you're not one of those big, you know, three, if you're naming off like Mergliata, Herb Dean, and John McCarthy, you know, was the refereeing that bad? I rewatched it today, and yes, she was throwing punches after the bell, but technically, you know, he's stepping in right when the bell sounds. When she threw that punch that hurt Holly Holm, I thought that she was kind of throwing it in the midst of him stepping in. So my question is just, does this all get made worse just because it wasn't Herb Dean, it wasn't John McCarthy? If that was John McCarthy, are we still having the same conversation? I think that's a point worth bringing up.
Did we describe what happened? So Jermaine Durandamy, who wound up winning the fight, 48-47 on all three cards. He's now the 145 women's champion. She threw a couple of late strikes after the second. As Brett says, in his opinion, they were right on the bell. You know, she was in motion throwing them. She got a warning. Then after the third, she did the same thing. Well, again, that one was debatable. I will throw in, I do believe one of the factors in people flipping out and melting down was, because you guys, I don't think, were watching. Well, you were, but
Joe Rogan.
Was Joe Rogan. Joe, yeah. Went crazy. And that is a lot of what happens with this. Judges aren't competent. Refs are incompetent, whether it's HBO boxing, Showtime boxing, or UFC, people follow the announcers.
Right, but I think that is a big factor, and it's always a big factor, especially in the judging. When people start flipping out, it's because, you know, Joe Rogan or somebody in the broadcast tells them that it was a bad decision. But as far as you mentioned that she got a warning after the second round, I think that was the issue, that she didn't. And that I think it was close enough that she should have been warned, because after the third round, when she did it again, now the referee is like going into this stern, you can't do that again, it's two times in a row you did it. Well, if there wasn't a stern warning after the first time, Now you're giving her a stern warning after the second time. Like, what, to me, that means if I'm Holly Holm, I'm like, all right, in the fourth round, I'm throwing punches 5 seconds after the bell. This is fine. I guess that's what you're supposed to do now. I mean, I think the problem is not warning her after the second round, or at least not sternly warning her enough, because then in the third round, when it happens again, instead of a point being deducted, that's when you'd give her the warning. So I think he just fell way behind and just got kind of caught up in it. I think each incident taken on their own is fine, but the fact that it happened back-to-back rounds makes it really bad.
My whole thing on this is that, was Todd Anderson the right call for the main event? Probably not. Did he do a great job? I'm not suggesting that he did. I'm just saying that I've seen worse, worse cases of refereeing. I think that we're actually glossing over the bigger problem was the judging. I thought the judging stood out as worse than the officiating as far as the referees were concerned, and it's particularly when you're talking about one individual. And Adam, you know who I'm going to mention, Doug Crosby. I think he's notoriously the worst judge in the history of mixed martial arts, and I think at this point he almost wears it as a badge of honor. I've met the guy personally, and I just feel like he's so convinced that he's the smartest guy in the room that he's looking for things that aren't even there.
What fight was he involved in? Because he wasn't. Eric Colon was the guy who had the 30-27 for Anderson Silva.
Well, I'll tell you one fight he was involved in was Nick Lentz. And, okay. and what everyone was talking about is that Doug Crosby and Nick Lentz know one another.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is the commission is allowing a judge with a personal relationship to one fighter to judge it. And there were literally multiple media members sitting on press row just hoping that Islam would not finish that Nick Lentz fight so we could go to the scorecards and see what Doug Crosby's
scorecard was. What did Crosby have? Was he the one that actually was sort of favorable to Lentz?
30-27.
30-27. The other two had a 30-25.
As favorable as you could possibly.
Which, by the way, the announcing on that one was really interesting because I was on satellite now. They now run the Fox Sports feed, which I really like, you know, if you're out and about. And Cormier and Rogan were having a debate about, what was his name, the winner? I don't want to mispronounce his last name.
Islam Makhachev?
Yeah. So they were saying that he wasn't dominant enough. And then I saw the scores. I was like, what was he supposed to win, 30-19? But the thing on Crosby, so that's a big problem. You have a personal relationship documented with a fighter. The other problem with him is a problem I've had with officials, judges in many states. You're not a star. Doug Crosby does interviews. He's part of features. He's posting on something called the MMA Underground. People know it for years. That's it. You're out. You can't be a judge.
That's my John McCarthy problem. Like, I don't think McCarthy.
But this is worse. Yeah, I agree with you on McCarthy.
I don't think he wants to be a like one of the fighters. Mm-hmm. He wants to be a star of the show. He thinks he's part of the action. That's the exact opposite of what you want. I said for a long time, I don't think McCarthy should be involved in fights. I don't think he should be reffing. I don't think they should be assigning him to fights because he does want to be a part of the show, and that's fine. Then go be a commentator or go do something else in the sport. Go sign autographs or something. You can't be a part of the show as an official, and that goes to every sport. Like Steve Uduheim and every other sport too. Like once you become part of the show and you want to be a star, you're out.
Yeah, the pool of people to choose from in terms of referees and judges though is just not that great. So when I look at McCarthy, I think for the most part he does a good job. So I'm willing to. I think the issue with McCarthy is that he feels like he's almost in a position where he needs to be an authority on it because he was essentially one of the guys who drafted it. And so first of all, he's proud of that, and he likes to discuss it in public. I'm with you. I don't think he should be talking openly about these things, especially when he's talking about specific fighters on Twitter that he could be officiating. But as long as he continues to do a good job, I can live with it. Doug Crosby does a terrible job.
Every time.
So not only is he, you know, have the personality issues, but it clearly affects his ability to perform the task. So I don't know. I mean, he's not even allowed to judge fights in many states, but in New York, apparently he is.
Last thing on this. How vocal can Dana White be? Because we know normally here in his state, I mean, he'll go nuts on the athletic commission. Does he have to give it a couple of fights? You know, they're two fights in because, hey, they just got to New York. Bro, back down. You can't be, you know what I'm saying? Does he have to actually be a little bit careful in pointing out, or is he actually doing the sport a disservice by not pointing out, you know, big errors like this?
I think he probably does a disservice to not point it out, but then again, you never know what Dana's take is going to be, if it's going to actually be the correct one. I mean, he's an emotional guy, especially on fight night. You put a mic in front of him on fight night, and a fight, you know, perhaps didn't go the way that you know, he thought it would, or the action was terrible. You know, like if a referee doesn't break up two guys who are just smothered against the fence, you know, that could always be one. So I don't know. Sometimes Dane's helpful with these things and sometimes he's not. I think he should be fine to express his opinion, though. I don't think he should withhold his opinion just because it happens to be new in New York. I don't think that, you know, that's the way to look at it.
I think Saturday he was more concerned with the fact that the fights weren't great.
Yeah.
He said after this, like, this is not our best night.
Next up on our MMA 6 as we open a Thursday edition of the MMA Insiders. What's next for that 145 title? You guys kind of shocked me last week saying, hey, there's no guarantee the division even stays around, even though they crowned a champion. It seems like there's a bunch of chatter about what is going to be next for GDR, Jermaine Durandamy. She sounds like, hey, Holly Holm rematch. Let's do it. Hey, GDR, what about Cyborg? I feel a little beat up. What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I put out a tweet today. Well, because she finally talked to the media. She wasn't able to talk to the media in Brooklyn. She talked to the media today on a conference call. And, you know, I happened to be first in the queue. They went to me first, and I was like, so what is the update with the hand? What is the deal with the hand? You know, you mentioned it right there in the cage that you might need surgery on this thing. So where is it at? She's like, well, I haven't seen the doctor again yet. So I don't know. I mean, I might need surgery. I might not. And so then I asked her, okay, well, But the Holm rematch is what you want. I mean, you've put that out there on social media. That's where you're at. And she's like, yes, I believe that has to come next. And it's just like, I went on Twitter and I said, I feel like if Cyborg gets passed by USADA and she's available to be Jermaine Durandamy's next fight, that hand's going to need surgery on. And I don't like writing tweets like that because I don't step in the octagon. I don't have the courage that Jermaine Durandamy does to put myself in the line of fire. But I am an observer of this sport. People ask my opinion of it, and it just seems clear as day to me that if Chris is ready to go, Jermaine will not be.
Would you?
Wow.
You would do the same thing.
Of course. I'm not criticizing her whatsoever.
It's the right move. Like, the longer you don't fight Cyborg, the longer you get to hold the title and be a world champion.
That's exactly
so
right.
So why, I mean, I actually think Holly Holm wins the rematch against Durandamy anyway, but, like, I think there's a better chance that she beats Holly Holm than there is she beats Cyborg. I'm sure it's not looking good for Durandamy, but I'm sure what she hopes is that Cyborg gets a long suspension, and that she doesn't have to worry about this, and she can be like, "Hey, listen, she's out. I have no choice."
What are you guys hearing that Dana White said before the event? Hey, things are looking good. Sounds okay with USADA and Cyborg.
Basically, that if you apply for a retroactive therapeutic use exemption, more often than not, it's just a hard no. They come back and they're like, "No." This case, they're asking for documents that, you know, you really wouldn't be asking for unless you were strongly considering it. That's how it's been described to me by White and Cyborg's lawyer. So that's where they're getting this from, is that, hey, if they weren't considering this thing, we would have already gotten a no by now. We would have moved on to the next process. But they are asking for documents that suggest that they're thinking about it.
Yeah, if you look back through history, most of the retroactive TUEs get denied, as Brett was saying, just right off the bat. And sometimes they do look into it, and sometimes they try to figure it out. It seems – I think they're looking at it the most positive way possible. I think it still very, very well could be – and if you remember, Dana White said about the John Jones thing, yeah, it's looking really good. It's looking really good. And then they had the arbitration hearing, and it really didn't turn out you know, as well as they had hoped. So I think that they're – as Brett said, kind of reading the tea leaves and saying, hey, they're, you know, at least they're looking into this. So it's possible something good could work out for her, but I think when they start – really going into it, whether she has a legitimate case or not, I'm certainly not a medical expert, but her past history will probably come into play if they go in front of a board, which from reading the rules that it is a board of people. And I think when they go to it, they'll be like, well, this is the positives, this is the negatives, and it might not work out as well as they hope.
Next story on our MMA 6, I feel like I need to add a feature, hashtag fake MMA news. Because I felt like there was more than a few stories this week along those lines. We'll get to some of the big ones. I saw a story last day or so that fighters are claiming, or someone is claiming, that you can't get fight tapes anymore from UFC. And with WME ownership in place, they're just telling the fighters in their camps, Fight Pass, subscribe to our service and you can watch all the fights up there. Is that true or not?
I mean, from what I understand, it is. I don't know if Brett's talked to anybody else. Brandon Gibson is the one that really started putting this out, and I've heard some other people discussing it. And essentially, you used to call the UFC, say, "Hey, who am I fighting?" And they would send you back tape, and you would be able to get a tape of it. In the last couple of years, it's been a a zip drive, and they just send you a link, and you can click on it and get the tape there. But as UFC Fight Pass has gotten bigger, and there's more and more fights on there, I guess somebody made the decision and just said, if you just get Fight Pass, you get all the fights anyway. Just go watch the fights. But it doesn't work out as well because it's not as easy. You just can't transfer to like a DVD to pass out to everybody. There's a lot of things that get in the way. So I would like to think, now we'll see. I haven't talked to anyone about this. I would like to think that at some point somebody's going to hear, oh, this really doesn't work out, and maybe we can go back to doing it the old way. But you really never know with things.
You're like
laughing.
This. Does this seem plausible? Like, this is the corporate world now of WME and UFC. Like, hey, we're going to cut costs.
I think they're going to cut costs however they can. But if there is a, response to it, a negative response to it, I think Brandon Gibson will probably get a tape. That's why I'm laughing about it because, I really didn't look into this story too much. I mean, Brandon Gibson is a great coach. You know, we've known him for years, and he is a guy who really, really, really loves to study film. So I believe him, and he would be the guy to know because I'm sure he's always the first guy to ask for these tapes.
Right. But it also makes sense that if you think about it, that somebody was making a decision that's not like a coach or not like somebody that deals with tape, and they said, why are we sending these tapes out? All the fights are right there.
Yeah.
Just let them watch those. And then they don't realize the practical implications of, oh, wait, you take those files and you transfer them to DVD and then pass out to all the training partners and use those for study, and you can't really have the functionality of the, rewind and that sort of things on it. Okay, well, this makes sense now. We'll go back to the old way. I have to think that it works out eventually, but I do believe absolutely they made the decision and said, all the fights are out there. Why are we sending them tapes?
I was just going to say, WME needs to make up a lot of money in order to, make this $4.2 billion thing work, but I don't think that they're going to completely deny some guy tapes if he's asking for tapes.
That's Brett Okamoto from ESPN.com. Adam Hill, of course, from the RJ and covering the cage, along with Steve Cofield, the MMA Insiders. We got a couple of Conor McGregor stories coming up. We'll get to those in a second. Lighter story, did you guys see the video put out by some jiu-jitsu experts showing how to defend the Donald Trump handshake?
It's great. I mean, it's required. We know now it's necessary.
Explain what's going on with the Donald Trump handshake.
When Trump doesn't know how to shake hands. I mean, that's the bottom line.
What does that mean?
Like, he doesn't know how.
Everyone knows how to shake a hand.
No, he doesn't. He either grabs hand and then taps, which I don't understand. Like, is that an affection thing, or like when you're just tapping on the hand that you're shaking? Or he grabs your hand and just yanks you toward him.
We have seen video of him doing it at least to 10 people, it is shocking.
It makes no sense, but I don't think we need any instructional videos or anything. Just watch Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada. He came in and he's like, it's not happening to me. He goes in, grabs shoulder, then shakes the hand and holds Trump in place so he can't yank. That's the move.
Left hand on the Trump right shoulder. I think that's the way it was, right?
Yeah.
And then, so he's braced.
He braces him.
So if you pull, we're twisting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Now, the jiu-jitsu technique, it seemed a little aggressive. It was basically like almost trying to break the wrist of President Trump.
Right, there's no need for that. But we don't, like, I think,
like, it was actually,
I understand.
You allow him to pull you in, then you grab behind his elbow, you twist his wrist into a position where you're going to break his wrist.
Right.
And he even said, like, for the Secret Service, I'm not suggesting anyone really does this.
Right.
But if you needed to against someone Trump-like, being aggressive with a handshake, this is what to do.
It's the way to counteract. And listen, the jiu-jitsu world thinks that they can solve every problem with jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
And it's just not – that's just how it is. Like, you don't need to go that far. All you need – like, you don't need to break his elbow and, like, do anything crazy. Do the Trudeau method, hold him in place, shake the hand, and let's move on. Like, you don't need jiu-jitsu to solve everything.
Imagine if Justin Trudeau had seen this video and then tried like a flying armbar.
He's
that
Canadian.
May have created some
probably
sort of
a Saint
international
Pierre fan.
Scandal.
Yeah, he's a Saint Pierre fan. I'm sure he's learned some tricks. He's probably been to TriStar a couple times.
All right, quick time out here on the MMA Insiders. So GQ did a piece on Conor McGregor. He actually gave his take on our president. I don't know if Adam's going to like that. And what was Conor doing here? He's in Vegas. Is the Floyd fight happening? Is Dana White, UFC, WME going to allow it to happen? These guys are the insiders, so they'll give us the latest.